Welcome to Developing Leaders in Higher Education IT. I'm Sherry Thompson. I'm completely technology impaired right now. So I'm trying to facilitate this for the online audience who can hopefully hear me. So hello, online audience. One day I'll be able to take your questions. We will get that set up. I apologize in advance that I cannot at this time, but we will get that squared away. Welcome to the online audience, and welcome to you all here. Our speakers are wonderful. I've heard all three of them, actually, previous to this event, so we're very excited for them to be here. We have Keith McIntosh. He was Vice Chancellor for IT at Pima Community College, College District. Kirk Kelly, Associate CIO, CISO from Portland State University, and Melissa Wu, Vice Provost for Information Services and CIO at the University of Oregon. Take it away, folks.
Well, good afternoon to you here in the audience, and good afternoon to you to those who are attending online. As I said, my name is Keith McIntosh. I go by Mac. You've heard this before, so please call me Mac. Today's session, I would like it to be very interactive, if at all possible. We have some things that we want to share and present to you, but at any time you feel like you're not getting what you need and you want to have you have a question to ask us, please. There are microphones in the middle of the room. Please step forward, go to the microphone, okay? Before we get started, how many of you are in the room attending as people who aspire to be a leader in IT? Okay. And then how many of us are residing CIO IT leaders? One or two. Okay, so we're going to try to hit both those audiences, but I think there's going to be takeaways for both no matter what you came here for, okay? But feel free to ask questions. So without further ado, these are the things we're going to talk to you about. I'm going to start first, and then we're going to go to Melissa, then Kirk's going to hit cleanup about our perspective on what we think we should do to develop leaders in IT and higher education. So from my perspective, these are some of the things I feel like are extremely important. These are some of the things that I've tried to do in my career and will try to instill in those that follow with me. So one of the things, and this is something I, you know, just full disclosure, I started working at Pima. I was 24 and a half years in the military, so a lot of my leadership and management training I learned from there. And in the military and the Air Force specifically, we start to grow leaders from day one. I think it's important to start seeing leadership potential in folks at a young age and then trying to give them the encouragement and opportunity and challenges to grow to become a leader. So you'll see those things resonate in my theme. When I came to Pima in 2008, my boss, the current position I actually have, is Kirk Kelly. He was actually in that same position. And one of the things that was really great for me is my leadership style and what I feel for professional development resonates with how he does business as well. So we have two strong proponents from one institution, he's now at another one, but we won't hold that against him, about professional development. So these are the things that I think. So I meet biweekly with my direct reports. And when I meet with my direct reports, I'm trying to have conversations about the ongoing business of what we're working on that week or the next week. But I'm also want to have conversations about their professional growth and development along with the staff that they are supervising. So I tend to close each and every conversation about where we are with those type of conversations. Professional development is always going to be part of those biweekly conversations. A self-assessment, from my perspective, individually, I try to do this. I did this when I first came into higher ed. I came in the military, came out in 2008. I know a lot about leadership and management. I know nothing much about higher education. I'm now working in higher education. I went and did some self-assessments, 360s. That evaluated me and where I was and to be a higher education IT leader. From that assessment, I found out what I was deficient in. So once I know where I'm at and who I am, I know what I need to work on and grow and develop. So I think it's important to do a self-assessment. From a leadership and management standpoint, Kirk was very fortunate. He was very helpful to me. He gave me opportunities and challenges so I would get the exposure and the growth that I needed to have to grow, to get my knowledge level up to where I needed to be in higher ed. Does that make sense? I'm moving fast, so please don't hesitate to ask questions, okay? One of the things that I really love to do is most of the time there's people have leadership capability, they have leadership potential, they may not believe that in themselves. So it's incumbent upon us that are in leadership positions to try to provide that inspiration and that motivation. To try to look at them and tell them, hey, especially in one-on-ones, hey, I care about you, I see some potential in you, here's why I see you going. It's a collaborative conversation, and then trying to motivate them and inspire them to get to where they would like to go. I'm a strong proponent of developing a roadmap. Many people have heard me speak before, I've talked about this many times, that I'm very goal-oriented. So I try to look at 3 to 5 years out where I would like to be. And then I try to look backwards from where my destination is and try to figure out what do I need to do, what are the milestones at some interval, whether it's 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, that I need to achieve to help myself move forward to reach my goals. And in addition, I try to do the same thing for my staff and then help them reach their goals as well. And all the way through the journey is to provide encouragement and support. Okay? Any questions about that? Really? Could you go to the microphone, ma'am, so the audience online, or can we bring the microphone to you? Oh, she went to the microphone. Thank you so much for asking a question. You make me feel very loved. Thank you.
So this is all good leadership advice.
Yes, ma'am.
It's all putting the burden on you.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I think I learned from being in IT is that a lot is not in my control.
What do you mean?
You know, you can set your own goals. You can set your own roadmap. You can collaborate with other people to try to get feedback about that. And a 360 is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, certainly with all the things, changes that have been happening recently in higher ed and in tech kind of converging together, you know, this big bubble, it's hard to map a career when the field is changing so much. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So, you know, the big thing about that is you know, I think I'm going to translate a little bit of what I understand your question to be, is that if I was to choose very specifically where I wanted to go, and I started 5 years on this journey, by the time I get 5 years into my journey, where I wanted to be could be entirely, that's no longer important or needed, right? So a lot of times, and I have had to learn this too, because not everybody is exactly like me, sometimes you just put a general destination where you want to go and be flexible enough to know that, you know, I think no matter what you do, time's going to transpire. So what are you doing to try to move yourself to where you want to be? And it's okay to have something change in front of you, and it's okay for you to change your mind. But don't let that discourage you from trying to move forward into some general area, okay? Hopefully, I think it's best when you can crystallize on something. For me, it was very fortunate because I chose the CIO path. I don't think that's going to change in its title, but I think what its roles and responsibilities are. Now, if I wanted to go in something more technical that might be obviated, you know, 5 years from now, then I have to be ready to make that adjustment. Does that help?
Yeah, but it's even general things like a research institution versus a small liberal arts college, which is something that we also often talk about, or a community college, you know, and that there are different tracks for those things,
mm-hmm.
that even those things seem like they're a little bit hard to aim for right now.
Any of my colleagues have any thoughts on that?
Hello? Yeah, I think my thoughts are going to largely echo Mac's thoughts. And one of the things I like to do, and I'm not to my slide yet, so I'll start talking about it now, is I like to talk to people about, you know, 3, 5, 10-year goals, you know, and try to say, where do you want to be in 10 years? And the thing is that you can't be granular when you start talking about 10 years. You can, you know, nobody knows what 10 years from now looks like. And I think all of us in the year 1990 could have talked about where we wanted to be in 10 years, but none of us really knew the internet was coming and would kind of change the way technology, man, you know, runs for us, period. I don't think anybody in 1990 or 1987, or when you pick the date whenever you want to, you couldn't see that coming. So I like to have those kind of longer term conversations and then talk more globally about what do you want to be doing? You know, do you want to be in management? Do you want to be a leader? Do you want to be a CIO? Do you want to stay in a technical track, which might change over time also? And then those little individual paths that you will take along the way will all be with kind of that long-term goal in mind. And you might not even know how those paths apply to that long-term goal, but it kind of winds up being this overarching thing that directs you. And that's why I like to look long-term. And of course, at the stage I'm at in my career right now, I start talking to people that are in a similar stage in their career about, you know, what's our map to retirement? Now, you know, when I was 25 and in IT, I didn't really think about retirement. And now that seems really close, so.
Actually, speaking more specifically to your question about the difference between, you know, training for a research university versus a smaller college, I would say if you're looking at an IT leadership position, there are commonalities between them, and that's what it comes down to. And I've interviewed at both levels, and I've always been able to take my public university experience and speak to interview questions that actually apply, because there are a lot of commonalities in higher ed. There's more commonalities, I think, than there are differences, so it's something to remember.
Okay, well, Melissa, you're up. You can stay there if you like.
Keith, before you guys get going, I thought I might. I know that you two went to Jenny's develop a career plan session this morning, right? And one of the things that comes out in that is the idea that we're not just talking career plan.
Personal
really
life plan.
To do this, you should have a life plan or at least think about it. And as Jenny says, I don't have it all written out. Some of us do, but it's in my stomach. But how do you put your career plan together if you haven't really thought about a life plan? For instance, we're all at different stages right now. Some of us might be mapping to retirement. So I really like some of the resources that she has put there. And for any of you who didn't attend, you go to her session on the online program for this conference. She has maybe 36 resources,
really
including
good.
Life planning maps, career planning maps, and that really fits into this question that you just raised.
Great response. Yeah, Jenny Mehmedovic, that's Mehmedovic, Jenny. I think I did it well.
Yep.
All right. So next up is my colleague, Melissa.
I can't.
You even spelled it right. I think you pronounced it right. So, okay, this is embarrassing.
Well, you know what's going to happen is, of course, that Kirk's going to get up here, and he's going to have to do that again. So even though my slide is really, really people. No, what's actually really funny is when he stands on the floor and I stand up here, we're the same height. So even though my particular slide is actually aimed more at people that are mentoring other people, it's also, I think, something for those being mentored or being coached should be aware of. I tend to be maybe a little bit different than Mac and Kirk here in that maybe I challenge people a bit more, or maybe the verbs I'm using here are a little more challenging, except for the first bullet. I mean, basically, you can look for leaders at any level. Let's face it. And I have found people at different levels that have been a couple levels below that I've seen qualities in them and have actually tried to nurture those qualities. So if you're a person that's trying to nurture other people, don't look just to your direct reports. You can look below your direct reports or even look sideways. You know, for example, one of my distributed IT colleagues is sitting in the room here. And he's making faces at me now. But I'm also certainly looking sideways at my colleagues on campus. They're not part of Central IT, but they're just as important for us to be looking at. I always like to nudge people out of their comfort zones. And so this is why I'm saying these are some things that you might be watching for in the people that are your managers. They might be doing this to you, and you may not like it. But keep in mind that maybe they're doing it for a reason. I'm constantly getting people stretch goals. I'm constantly challenging people. Another one is to make sure you customize mentoring. And I have given plenty of talks on mentoring. There are different types of mentoring for different stages in another person's life. At some point in their lives, they may need sponsorship. In other words, they need you to get out there and introduce them around and say, hey, this person would be great for this recruitment that you have open right now. But another part of that person's life, that person may just actually need a friend, a shoulder to cry on. So make sure that you're aware of either where you are, if you're the protege, or if you know where your protege is, if you're the mentor. I like to delegate decision-making a lot. And this, again, if you're on the receiving end of this, it's not necessarily your boss dumping on you. They're trying to give you assignments, or basically letting you do your best, or maybe letting you fail. The point is that you actually have to be allowed to fail as long as it's done in a safe environment, because you're never going to learn anything if you don't fail. And that's the same for us. From the management side, you've got to allow your people to fail. And the thing I think that really drives my direct reports crazy is I ask open-ended questions all the time. Or worse, sometimes I'll even turn things around. They'll ask me to try to make a decision, and I'll turn it around and just say, so, well, what do you think? And I have to always raise my eyebrow like that, too. So these are some of the things to remember on both sides. Sometimes if you get irritated at your boss, maybe they're pulling one of these on you. But it's really actually for your own good, really. So I think I'll pass this one off to Kirk.
Thank you. All right, so we had a raise of hands. I'm just curious, how many people in the room manage at least one person right now? Okay, so we've got the bulk of you. My slide is really, I don't have a formula. This was kind of my shotgun approach to the things that I've done over the last about 25 years that I've been in management. I've been in IT like 27 years. I'm pretty sure I'm going to be able to say 30 years. And at one point in my career, I thought anybody that's been doing this for 30 years is really old. I don't feel old, but my hair is getting grayer. So, believe in people and see their potential. I think this is a huge, and a lot of mine is going to be a little more touchy-feely than what Melissa just got done describing, but it all works out. So anyways, believe in people and see their potential. And that's really about seeing people not where they are today, but where they are 3 to 5 years from now. And then if you see that, then you, my next bullet point is you interact with them, not where they are today, but where you see them 3 to 5 years from now. Because a lot of people can't see their own potential. And if you start interacting with them, realizing the potential that they have, and talking to them at the level of their potential, it really helps them start to realize that and see it in themselves. So I found those to be really successful. And again, this is going to be a lot towards those people, as I mentioned earlier, who are currently managing people or aspire to, which is most of the room. I talked just a little bit ago about creating 3, 5, and 10-year goals. And I usually look at people, I try to meet with all the staff, and I don't know in my new role, because I've got over 100 now, if I'm going to be able to continue to do this, but I try to fit in at least a half an hour every year with every staff member. And you know, those conversations, especially in the beginning, almost always start with the question of where do you want to be in 10 years? And you'd be amazed at the number of people that stare at me with a blank stare and say, I have no idea. I really don't know where I want to be in 10 years. And then I usually follow that up by saying, well, he or she who plans gets, which is a statement that Glenn Wild, who was a CIO I was mentored by at one point in my career, who's since retired, he had it up on his wall. Because truly, at the end of the day, you find that out in life, and you find that out in your departments. And so, I try to meet with them and make sure that you map those things out. And a lot of times I'll send people back away and with that pure task and say, by the next time we meet, you know what my first question is going to be, and I'm going to need more than a blank stare when you come back in here a year from now. We better have talked about something. And sometimes they have those goals, and then we go into further conversations. Mac talked about this. I really, really, really try to provide opportunities for staff. I try to provide opportunities that puts them in the spotlight. Now, that's risky because they might fail. And often I'll try to put staff in a spotlight that I know as the CIO, and my job title's changed since this was announced. I'm now the interim CIO at Portland State. And so I'll keep referring to this from a CIO perspective because that was also my prior job at Pima Community College. So I try to put those staff in the spotlight, and it's a risky thing to do when you're in charge because it's often things that you know you can do and you know you can do it well. And you're going to put somebody else out in the spotlight and they might fail. And that could be bad on you and it could be bad on them, but I think those opportunities are huge. So I'm always looking for that, no matter what it happens to be. There's a big RFP, LMS project at Pima that Mac had really no experience with in his entire life, and I put him in charge of the entire process. And that particular thing for him got him visibility around campus that he would have never got in the position he had. So those kind of things wind up being really important. Education professional development, really important. Education is kind of what we're about. You know, I think that we need to be pushing what it is we do, and I've seen so many people get stalled in their career when they don't have the education they really need. And I usually give them my stories that I waited 15 years with people telling me I needed something besides a bachelor's degree. And I finally went back to school towards my master's degree, and I got it about 3 months before I got the job that was master's required. So, you know, I almost waited too long. And I continually push people. And the other thing I always tell them is, you know, you always think you're busy today, and you always think it's going to be better tomorrow, and it is not. It's just worse tomorrow. But you don't realize that. I mean, you can even have little kids keeping you awake all night, and you think it can't get worse than this, and somehow it just seems like life gets busier, so there's no time like the present to start. Always try to hire for the next position. I always, when I'm interviewing for jobs, try to look at those people and say, not can they do this position, but can they do the next position? Because I want to be filling a pipeline. And if they can't do the next position, and I'm hiring somebody that's top-ended in their career, I'll do it occasionally, but I really have to think about it because that means I've hired somebody that's non-promotable. And sometimes it's hard to pick that up in an interview, and other times it's really easy to pick that up in an interview and you realize, you know, this person can't go to the next level or has no desire to. So it's something we try to do, and that can be risky in a tech or difficult to do in a technology area because you might be hiring somebody that's a technologist that has no desire to ever go into management and thinks those of us that are in management are, you know, half crazy, which we might be. All right. This is interesting because this, you know, like I said, I've been at this for a while, and I probably have to put on glasses to read the local screen, but I can read that one. So, rumor to invest in the top 20%, try to meet with everybody every year. Everybody in the room know what the Pareto principle kind of is, or hear about Pareto period, anybody? So anybody hear about the 80-20 principle? So 80-20 was coined by Pareto, and it can be used in all kinds of ways in life. But the way I use it here is that most departments split up into the top 20, the middle 60, the bottom 20. The top 20 get 80% of the work done. The middle 60 get the remaining 20% of the, or remaining 40% of the work. No. 20. I get too many numbers. The bottom 20 don't get anything done. And of course, in the purest sense, in the Pareto principle, every year you're supposed to replace the bottom 20, which in higher ed we can't really do. So we often spend a lot of time dealing with, when you get into management, the bottom 20. And we really have to make a conscious choice to invest in the top 20 because that's the pipeline that's going to fill all those future leadership jobs. And then the last one, somebody, you know, most of you have probably, if you've ever read John Maxwell's book, think he coined this, but I did some research and figured out really Teddy Roosevelt said it before Maxwell did. And people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And I found that to be so essential with dealing with people. If they know you care about them and their careers, then they'll care to listen to you and care how much you know. Until then, until they know you care about them, you're just talking. So those are my slides. Are you up next? Any questions at this point?
Well, I think we're all up.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I've been elected to be the person that do the most of the talking.
There you go.
So we wanted to start off with the first part of the presentation to tell you a little bit about who we were and some of our thoughts about leadership development. This is where we're going to really try to hope the audience will interact with us, and we're hoping for questions, all right? So, but we have some slides that we can talk about if there's not questions, but feel free. I want to make sure this is applicable to you. You came to attend for a reason, and I want to make sure you leave and you get, you know, fed with what you wanted to receive when you came in. So what questions do you have for you personally for your leadership development? I know this is risky. Yes? Hold on for the mic.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I sure can.
So one of the things that I look at in terms of leadership is not everybody can be a leader.
Correct.
But everybody should have leadership potential and opportunity. And so when looking at the staff that I have to manage, I always want to make sure that they are presented opportunities and I wait and see how they respond.
Right.
And I try to nudge them.
Right.
If they shy away from it, it could be for any number of reasons. I don't want to make them uncomfortable. But you need to spell it out to them sometimes. I'm giving you an opportunity to move forward, to move ahead. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they decline. Sometimes, you know, they're out of their comfort zone. They want to stay in their comfort zone. I don't want to push them to the point of incompetence.
Right.
I want to make sure that, you know, the wheels keep turning, everything keeps working. So developing the leadership potential for personnel isn't something that has to happen. You just need to make sure that you provide the opportunities and, you know, lay out the groundwork for it. Because we're not all going to be here forever.
That's a great point, and I think, you know, I think all of us echo what you say. Cindy has the microphone, and I know I'm going to put Cindy on the spot because she's from our institution as well. And I know that Cindy, you know, the reason why I talk, you know, I'm putting her on the spot because I have a passion for professional development, and I believe professional development is the key to grow people, grow leaders, no matter what you're doing. And she's probably our most passionate professional development person at our institution. And I think we agree on a lot of things, but we tend to disagree on some things. And one of the things that we want to make sure we treat everyone with the same opportunity. But like what Kirk said, I think you have a 20% level that you can see has that something unique that could do, that desire, that competency, whatever, that moxie, whatever you want to call it. So, you know, your professional development is on two levels. Would you agree or disagree, Ms. Dooling? I'm putting you on the spot.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
It's probably because I put you guys up there, right? Revenge. I agree that, you know, some people, and some of it I think is what you had said too, it depends on their station in life. What else is outside of their work that may be affecting what they can achieve at this point in time? But just, I think those opportunities so that when their personal life is different that they can jump in, that's wonderful. But again, not everybody can be a leader, but giving them opportunities to take in some sort of leadership role, take on a project or be involved in something that kind of moves them out of their comfort zone, like Melissa had said. I think those are pieces that help.
Okay. Thank you, Cindy. Appreciate that. Good. I like this. Now we're going to get some juices flowing. This is good.
Thank you. So I was wondering a little bit about that slide, the last one on your set, Kirk, about the 20-80%. And I think that your comment that we spend a lot of time at the 20% level, often, you know, we're handed employees or have employees for some other reason that aren't performing. And I hear, you know, making room and time and effort to concentrate on the top. But, I mean, what are some strategies to mitigate the amount of time that we're spending at, you know, the bottom 20% of performers? I feel like it's hard to allow that to just exist, you know, in the office. I mean, it's, in my experience, kind of corrosive. So what are strategies to not spend as much time managing that bottom 20% to free you up to do more at the top 80%?
Great question. Who wants to take that one first?
I think that Mac is trying to say that you can't spend zero time with those people. And the point, okay, maybe I'm just an optimist. I actually really do believe that everybody has something that they can do. And so spend the time trying to figure out what it is that they actually do have strengths in. Getting back to Jenny's presentation earlier, she talked about the StrengthsFinder assessment. You don't actually have to go through that assessment. Figure out what the strengths are. But I agree with Mac on concentrating on your top people. And there is a philosophy that if you ignore your top people, you always think you can. You always think you can ignore your top performers. The problem is if you ignore them, they actually feel ignored. And then you might actually lose your top performers. I mean, probably most of the people in this room are top performers. I mean, if your boss all of a sudden stopped paying attention to you, how would you feel?
Yeah,
you know,
some institutions,
you know,
that's
web,
so true.
Webcast on this, right? Okay. Let's pretend that your boss is not dysfunctional, okay? And totally seriously, I mean, but the point is you can't spend zero time with the lowest performers. You have to actually get something out of them, if only to deal with the morale issue for everyone else.
I want to take a moment to encourage our online audience to type in any questions that they have so they too can be part of this.
Oh, please do. Please do.
Two quick things I think of when you said that. And the first one is, you know, we should spend an effort, and Melissa hit on this, on niching people, right? Because we spend a lot of time trying to pound square pegs into round holes. And I think as management, we should realize that's a giant mistake. You know, if you're trying to make somebody who's semi-disorganized, you know, keep the file system up to date and pay attention to that, and when they don't do it at their home and they don't do it at work and they don't do it well and you keep beating them over the head, you find another job for them, because that's never going to work. It's just never going to happen. My other advice is you need a really good working relationship with HR. And I hate to say that, but I think if you've got a good working relationship with HR, then you've got a resource you can also tap when you've got somebody that's in that bottom 20%, because that's what HR does for a living. And they have a lot of resources they can help apply. And then worst case scenario, that good relationship with HR is going to help that person find some other job. And I hate to say that, but at some point in time, you're not doing anybody in the department a favor by keeping them around. And sometimes you feel like you're helping the person that's a bottom performer by keeping them around, when in reality you're damaging everybody else around them. So it's not fair.
Right? Or actually that individual. I think there's only a couple of people that I've convinced that their talents might be better utilized elsewhere that are no longer talking to me. Most of them are, because they realized after they'd gotten over the shock of being convinced to go somewhere else, they have come back in many cases and said, you know, that was the biggest favor you ever did for me. So you're not doing that person a favor either.
It's perspective, too. So if nobody wants to say, yay, I'm in the bottom 20%, right? Nobody wants to be there. So the first thing is to let them know that from your perspective, that's where they are, so that they can do something about it. And the second piece is not pounding them into a round hole if they're a square, but give them the opportunity to move into a different layer. You know, and it's last-ditch thing is, yeah, you don't want to get rid of a person who's going to try, but you have to identify that they're actually trying or that there's not some other mitigating factor. You know, it's a career. It's not who you are, but you may have a life, and there may be consequences that, you know, you have to get into those types of things, and having that relationship with HR is key.
All good points. Any other questions? None. Who has a 5-year plan in this room? Be happy? That's an easy one. Be happy. It is. Yeah. So where are you? Who put your hands back up? Who said they had a 5-year plan? Mike, I'm gonna pick on you.
Hold on, let me bring the microphone.
So Talk to me about your five-year plan, Mike. What's on there? Yeah, I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah, thanks.
You're welcome.
That's paybacks too, isn't it?
No. That was for your comment at lunchtime, Mike.
I knew it.
All right.
A couple of years ago, I made the decision to stay in higher ed for the rest of my career, or at least that's became part of my 5 or 10 year plan. So I was at a juncture where it was either stay in or get out, or I needed a new challenge. And so my new 5 year to 10 year plan was to stay in higher ed to do that. And in order to, I think, continue to be challenged, I'm going to need some additional certification or proof that I know what I'm talking about, maybe not just in IT, but around higher ed. So I chose to go back and work on my PhD in higher ed administration. I'm about halfway through that now. So my 5 year plan includes finishing that out and then seeing what happens next. It's about providing options, and I think some clarity will come through that process. So that was a cornerstone. You work on the cornerstone, and then it becomes more clear as you move. So it's not 5 years from this point. It's a rolling five-year window.
Yeah. Right. All right. Thanks for sharing. Anybody else?
Actually, I'm curious, though. I mean, something that Mike just mentioned and you brought up in your slides is the education issue. So I'm curious how many people think they need the next degree or some additional education in order to get where they're going. Okay, so if you're willing to share, I'm kind of curious what are the different reasons. I'm going to start running around, I guess.
5 years ago, I had a five-year plan, and the perfect job came open, and I applied for it, and five people got in the short list. It was very publicly known, and all but one had a PhD, and they were all men. And I couldn't do anything about the second condition. Well, I could, but I don't think I'm going to. And so I decided I would get a PhD. So.
I'm about halfway finished with my master's degree in MIS, and basically I'm just I was trying to get my boss's job, and he resigned before he retired. He didn't resign before I actually finished, but so now I'm interim. I'm hoping to keep the job. So
congratulations.
So we'll see how it goes. But I do have a question about how do you handle your peers when they might be difficult? Other department heads?
Well, I think that comes. I'd love to answer that question. I'm a very. All right. So you have to understand a little bit about me. So I'm answering from my perspective. I'm not giving you advice of what I think you should do. Okay. I'm going to put that out there. I'm a product of a military man. My dad spent 30 years in the military, and I spent 24 and a half years in the military. And one of the things you learn being in the military is you're direct in your communication. I have no problem being direct in my communication. My wife and I had breakfast this morning and was talking about the fact that she said, you have the innate ability to have a uncomfortable conversation with somebody and still like them and hang out with them. What she also told me was those on the receiving end, the other end of the conversation, I shouldn't say receiving, the other end of the conversation, because that sounded bad. Strike that for the record. You know what I meant. Could not separate the discourse or disagreement from each other. We're so intertwined with that whatever the issue is, we can't separate it from ourselves. You know, so you dislike that idea. That idea is mine, so you therefore don't like me. If you liked me, you know, so that's getting really psycho babble, but that's what I see happening quite a bit. So I'm very direct. And one of the things I try to do is just be consistent in who I am. I like to hang out with people. I like to talk to people. But I'm okay saying I disagree with you. And I'm also okay saying, you know, that perhaps your idea is better than mine. So, you know, when I have those things that are disagreements, and Kirk, I had an issue one time. I remember I was having a disagreement with somebody. He says, well, what are you going to do about it? So it's incumbent upon me, if I'm having a relationship with somebody, I have a part to play. So I became more proactive in those relationships that I have a difficult time with. I try to have conversations with those people outside of that particular issue we're working on. I want to have a better relationship with you. I want to understand where you are coming from. That's what I try to do first and foremost. I hope as a byproduct of that conversation, you get to understand me better. So the next time you and I are faced on an issue, we can better understand where we're coming from. it can almost help me in how I approach you in the future because I know you better. A lot of times when I get around the axle about something and I get sideways with somebody else, it's because I really don't know why you came from where you came from or why you think the way you think. So the better relationship I have, that helps me in the future. We're still get out of shape. So the biggest thing for me is to immediately try to make sure that I don't damage the relationship, but have an immediate conversation about that. Does that help? Because problems are going to pop up. You're never going to agree with everybody. People are going to get upset with what you're thinking or whatever you're doing. So that's just me.
Yeah, I think it's all about relationship. And, you know, as a CIO, you got to be able to relate in all four directions of the compass, north, you know, south, east, and west. And if you think about all those directions, north is your management, either east and west is your peers on one side, your kind of user base on the other side, and your employees on the south side. And you kind of have to play that role. And if you don't have that relationship with your peers and you don't have some credibility with them, I think you're in trouble. And, you know, life to me is about, you know, this process of putting change in people's pockets. You invest in them, you put a little change in their pocket, the day's going to come, you're going to need some change. And you're going to need them to pull some of the change you invested out of their pocket and give it to you. Relationships have an issue when it's not your change anymore, you're pulling out of their pocket. When it's their change, they're pulling out of their pocket to give you because you haven't given them any, that's when relationships have a problem. So you got to invest in the people around you and your peers. It takes a lot of time.
Great questions. Great questions. Nothing else? All of you guys came? Ma'am, do you have any questions? All right, well, I thought you did.
She had that question.
She did. I could see it.
Make sure I kind of turn my, don't have my back to you. I'm coming from the perspective of being a young person in the workplace, and fortunately, I've been able to climb up that ladder and be involved in a lot of projects and report directly to the CIO, and, you know, it's been great. It's been a positive factor in my career, but one of the things that I always battle and I always try and find ways to overcome this is how is it that people can take me seriously? Because I do feel I do know what I'm talking about. I didn't just come out of high school and just go into college. It was much more than that. So do you have any pointers for me as far as from, I guess, the facilitators or possibly from you, from your experience of working with younger folks? Well, I work in the IT department. I'm from New Mexico State University, and I'm in charge of the computing labs and also our student technology fee. So I do manage over $2 million. And incorporated with that, we have 33 different projects that take place at one time. I also have staff that are below me, as well as I have the majority of the students that are in our IT department. So I work directly with leadership and also with the president and provost's office, and it works great. I'm not complaining at all. And as you, I'm not complaining at all. I just find that I have difficult times when people look at me and they think, well, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know about these projects. You don't know. You haven't spoken to so-and-so. In actuality, yes, I have, and that is why I'm here talking to you today. So any suggestions?
So you and I probably have very similar problems. For one thing, there are some problems you're just not going to be able to overcome because of bias. Let's face it. And, I mean, I certainly have tried to. I suspect there are still people that have certain impressions. This is going to sound really, really trite. But, I mean, the best you can do, I mean, you can do your best. There are other things, too. I mean, I'm in a suit most of the time at work because otherwise, other than the white hair, which is coming in, otherwise, I look a lot younger than I actually am. I mean, actually, even dressed like this, I suspect most people will guess my age wrong by at least 10 to 15 years. So some of it is appearance, but some of it is how you carry yourself. But again, there are, and maybe you don't want to hear this, there is some of it that you may not be able to overcome. You're just going to have to do your best. I mean, I rose pretty quickly. So, I mean, there is hope. And if you're doing a really good job, people will see that. They really will. Does anybody else have any?
Well, I think we're down to, are we down to about 2 minutes left? So we'd have to, real quick.
I always like to say self-confidence is a parlor trick. And the truth of the matter is it's a lifelong problem. I have absolutely zip self-confidence, but I pretend I do. And I suspect a lot of us are in the same boat. It's the same thing when you get older. Is you begin to think that, like, well, why is anybody paying attention to me? This entire environment is so bloody young. My main thing I would say to you is we all suffer from the same thing. You're obviously doing a good job. You're moving up the ladder. Just hang on to that and beam that out there.
Yeah, it's tough. I think the old thing is, you know, I'm starting to kind of look at that myself. When I was younger, I just, you know, did the facial hair thing, which doesn't really work so much for you, but you get, you know, you look older, right? So, but I shaved the mustache, so.
That's very good. Well, hopefully you guys have enjoyed the time we spent today, and I know hopefully if you have questions, feel free to come up to talk to Kirk, Melissa, and I. We'd love to impart whatever we can with you. I love having this conversation. It's hard to appeal to each and every one of you and where you are in your career and what your needs are. So if you have something specific, please don't hesitate to speak to us. We wanted to leave you with the following thing. The slides will be available, so I won't read them all to you. These are things that we kind of consistently agree that you need to do if you're a person who aspires to become a leader in higher ed IT. These are things you should be looking to do yourself. And those of us who are in the role and responsibility of leadership, this is what we should be doing to help those who are trying to move up that ladder. Okay, these are just some of them. Okay, thank you for attending. Thank you for the online audience, and we appreciate the time we have with you. I hope you have a good time and enjoy the rest of your conference. Thank you.
And please fill out the feedback forms and do an evaluation of the session so that they know how wonderful they were.
Thank you.